And we're back here on Alaska HomeWise, brought to you by the Cold Climate Housing Research Center and the UAF Cooperative Extension Service. Our building and energy expert, Ilya Benesh, is here with me now. He's ready to answer your questions. And by the way, you can email the show at akhomewise, all one word, at cchrc.org. And we'll try and get your questions answered on the air. Ilya, how are you doing today?
Well, as far as I know, I'm doing pretty good.
That's good. First question. Where can I get information on the moisture content of wood for burning in my stove?
Well, I can throw out some good information for starters. Freshly cut wood can be really wet. I mean, it can earn up to 80% moisture. And in terms of wood burning, what's ideal for wood burning is 20% or less. Now, most cases in Fairbanks, because we're a fairly dry climate, if you cut your wood early in the spring, split it and stack it so air can flow through it, and cover it to keep it protected from rain, it should readily dry to that point by the time fall rolls around and you're getting ready to burn it. However, don't cover the pile with tarps that drape over the sides. This will affect drying. You want this wood stacked so the air flows through it, ideally in a woodshed, or if you don't have a woodshed, cover the top of the pile with old roofing tin or plywood, something like that. Stack the wood on pallets. You can get those free from most of the lumber yards. That protects the wood from ground moisture. The bottom line here is the drier your wood is, the cleaner and more efficiently it will burn. And I kind of cringe when I see the trailers of fresh cut wood going down the road in the fall, because I know there's a lot of people out there that are guilty of burning wet wood. And the issue there is the more moisture in the wood, the less energy you will get in terms of heat, because you have to convert that moisture to steam and basically burn it out of the wood first. And once you've got that excessive moisture problem, then you get issues with creosote. And one other thing, if you start burning wood with 25% moisture content or higher, the amount of pollution goes up in terms of harmful particles going out the chimney, and it goes way up in some cases. So, you know, cut the wood responsibly, split it, stack it for at least a full summer, part of a spring, part of a fall, you'll do okay.
Is it easy to retrofit a house with an HRV system? Now, HRV is a heat recovery ventilator, yes?
Yes, that's correct. And the HRV, just sort of a short overview, is a mechanical ventilation system. They're getting to be a lot more common just because we're making houses a lot tighter these days, both with new construction and a lot of the places that are older that are getting retrofitted with insulation are getting a lot tighter. So you've really got an increase in potential issues with moisture and air quality. In terms of whether it's easy to retrofit a house with an HRV, it really isn't, it depends kind of question. Any house can be retrofitted, but some are definitely going to be more challenging than others. If the house has a crawl space, that's a big plus in its favor because it gives you more options to run ducting. You can get underneath the house itself, find the partition walls in between the joist bays, and crawl around down in there and then access those basically walls and cut the ducting in from that direction. Couple other considerations is the HRV is going to need a source of power. Preferably short duct access to the outside for the cold side ducting. That's going to bring in the cold, fresh air and exhaust the stale air. And it's going to need some way to tie in its condensate drain, which usually means tying into a floor drain, tying into existing plumbing, something like that. Personally, I'd probably a slab-on-grade house would be more challenging just because you don't have anywhere really to hide the ducting easily. And a multi-story house could be another issue if especially the walls aren't stacked nicely on top of each other so you can run the ducting evenly top to bottom. The way the installers look at it is what is the easiest way to hide the ducting. If closets, pantries, and utility rooms are good locations, then that can really simplify things. And something else I'd like to say, too, is we're currently in the process of putting together a publication that gives a really good overview of HRV systems as well as has a lot of photos of retrofit applications, how somebody who's trying to do an HRV system themselves can install the ducting, what some of the pitfalls are, what the codes are in relation to air quality. So it's a very comprehensive manual. Should be ready in about a month or two.
Are there any cautions for replacing windows in the winter? Ooh, that's a cold job.
Yeah, I can say that from experience, too. It's definitely less comfortable. And yeah, with flanged windows, especially the vinyl ones, they get more brittle in extreme cold, so just handling them takes a little more care. A couple other things to watch out for, specifically the minimal expanding spray foam for sealing the gaps around the window to the framing doesn't cure well below freezing, so it'll actually just kind of run and drip out of there. So The CAN instructions are pretty specific in this regard, but that doesn't stop people from trying. So just keep in mind the foam doesn't tend to perform well at cold temperatures. But if you install, say, a foam backer rod into the gap first, then that stops the airflow from the outside. Then you can spray the foam in, and it works out okay. I'd also like to caution people if they're using a lot of spray foam in cans. Initially, that blowing agent that they're using can cause irritation, so if you're concerned, it might not hurt to wear a respirator, or at least look at that specific spray foam product and make sure you know what's in it. So it's something people kind of take for granted that, hey, I'll just spray it on there, but it might actually be something of a health hazard.
Next question, where can I find information about building and energy classes in the Fairbanks area?
There's a couple options here. The UAF Cooperative Extension Service and Rich Seifert in particular give classes year-round on various aspects of construction and alternative energy. The portal at 455 Heat sponsors classes for homeowners who are looking to do improvements to their house's performance. The next run of these classes is from November 30th to December 10th. They're being taught by Terry Dzinski, who's a longtime local energy rater, and so this is part of the whole Alaska Housing Finance Corporation energy retrofit program, and they've got a whole range of subjects. People can always contact me, too, if they're looking for something specific. There's always people coming from the building science community that teach classes for contractors, but a lot of it is also good information for anyone who's looking into building a home, whether they do it themselves or hire it out.
And the last question, how can I keep condensation off my windows in the wintertime?
What really causes condensation is a combination of two things, humidity and temperature. And the warmer the indoor air is, the more humidity it can hold. The air closer to a window gets cooler, and as this happens, it can no longer hold the same amount of moisture. This is when you start seeing condensation forming. It works the same way in crawl spaces with exposed cold water lines, depending on conditions. You'll see that dew building up on the pipes. But in the case of the windows, we can get a little more illustrative. I've got an example here. And let's say the indoor temperature is 70 degrees Fahrenheit and the outdoor temperature is zero, then a single pane window will start having condensation at 15% humidity in the house. A double pane can go as high as 42% indoor humidity before you have condensation, and a triple pane can go as high as 65% because it's the best insulated. And these numbers are based on average windows in each category. A really good quality triple pane window may be able to go significantly higher in terms of condensation. Keep in mind that target humidity levels in a house should range from about 30% to 50%. That's kind of the standard. And if humidity is really low, some people become a lot more prone to respiratory infections as the membranes dry out and the body's ability to cope with issues can suffer. Of course, high humidity can cause the same problems with bacteria and mold growth. And so good indoor air quality is always a concern. You've got to ventilate and shoot for that, you know, sort of target 30 to 50%. And quite frankly, if you've got a house with ventilation, which is required by code, it's going to be really hard to get to that 50% just because we're inherently so dry in Fairbanks. And, you know, good air quality is always a concern in cold climates. We spend so much time indoors that maybe even in places like Fairbanks we're exposed a lot more to it than somewhere where it's a lot warmer. And the other thing, too, is high humidity levels in our climate can add up to vapor drive and getting moisture in the walls. That's another thing to be aware of in terms of how your house has been built. Keep an eye out, and the windows are a great telltale sign. You start seeing a lot of moisture on a double pane or triple pane window, it's usually a pretty good indicator that there's something going on with humidity.
That's all for this week's edition of Alaska HomeWise. Thanks for tuning in. Don't forget you can email us questions at akhomewise, all one word, at cchrc.org, and we'll see you next week.
If you want to submit a question to Alaska HomeWise, email us at akhomewise@cchrc.org. We'll try and get your question answered on the air. For more information on HomeWise, including a schedule of upcoming shows, visit the UAF Cooperative Extension Service website at www.uaf.edu/ces or the Cold Climate Housing Research Center at cchrc.org. Save energy. Save money. Become HomeWise.